This is the Delivery Space podcast. Whether you're interested in software delivery, business change, or transformation, we have some great content lined up for you. We launch into different areas to bring you insights and experiences that you won't get from a book. This is our episode on the role of leadership in complex product environments. And we have Willem, Jan, and Kling with us today. Hello, Willem, Jan. How are you?
I'm fine, Isha. Thank you. How are you?
I'm okay. It's starting to look a lot like spring in the UK.
Yeah, we have similar weather. The sun is shining right now, but still only 1 or 2 degrees above freezing.
You have Christmas, all the festivities and everything. Then you have the dark months and you're wishing, like, you know, we're at the back end of winter. Can we have spring now? Can we get on with it?
Yeah, agreed.
Willem Jan, can you give our audience an introduction to yourself, please, so that they can get to know you better?
In my daily work, I'm one of a team of 6 Agile coaches within our department at Worldline. And Worldline is one of the biggest paytech companies in the world. It's not that well known, but many people pay with Worldline if they know it or not. I coach people and teams throughout the organization, from people who build the product up to C-level. And in my role, I've been heavily invested in helping the leaders in the company to be more effective. What I tend to see is that teams know what it is to work effectively using Scrum or other Agile ways of working, but the issue is often with middle management and higher management. I also write and speak about Agile and everything related to the topic of value creation. I have my own newsletter at Substack, and this is called Aangeling on Agile. I'm also a regular speaker. I do this to share my insights and help people grow. And I also do this as a Worldline ambassador, as the company believes it's important to show our pursuit of excellence. I live in Katwijk, and this is a village at the west coast of the Netherlands. I love running and having a good time with my family.
It's such a pleasure to have you on. I got to know you and came across you through Serious Scrum and the articles that you also share on LinkedIn, which I find very, very insightful. And in terms of your background, like you've described with the company that you're with, you've been there for a while, so you must have seen leadership transform and change along the way.
I indeed did. I was also part of that journey, by the way. I started in 2015 as a regular project manager, and I noticed that we had trouble delivering projects, creating output, creating value. We were really heading towards disaster. And then luckily we had someone higher up in the chain who said, well, we have to find another way of working. Let's go Agile. I also got introduced to an Agile way of working. I got inspired starting to move away from my role as a project manager, really towards Scrum Master, and also deep diving into the topic. And then I found that there's a lot of nonsense written about Agile, Scrum, and related to topics in the world. So I decided to write for myself, and I came across Sjoerd Nijland, who had the same ideas, and we formed Serious Scrum. But in the company, we have had a journey of about 7 to 8 years. And indeed, you see the growth of the leaders towards fostering the environment, ensuring that people are trusted to do the best work towards the goals, instead of micromanaging. So it's really great to see. But we also had many mergers within the company. We grew and grew and grew through mergers. And with that, you also, of course, adopt cultures from the other parts of the organization. And you really need to find a way there as well. And we are now doing that within Worldline.
It's lovely being able to influence that kind of leadership culture change, the team culture change as well. Be able to see how one actually impacts the other. And I look forward to hearing more as we go through your experiences of what that's been like, but in complex product environments, which is what we're going to be talking about today. So for those in our audience, Willem Jan, who are perhaps not familiar, can you help us kind of differentiate from a traditional project-based leadership approaches to more product-centric approaches?
If you look at the traditional approaches, then the premise typically is that you know if you produce a certain output that the desired result will follow automatically. So cause and effect are tied to each other. So the environment is stable. There's no guesswork anywhere. And if you are in such a situation, you can simply do a thorough analysis, create a fantastic plan, and then follow the plan until the last step, and then deliver and then have success. But if you're looking at creating and sustaining products of value, especially in the current environment, then we're talking about different things, because technology is advancing at record speed. Last year, we just knew about ChatGPT, and now it's taking over the world.
Yep.
What will come next? We don't know. We also don't know what the competitor will come with in a month from now that you have to respond to, or maybe even try to be ahead of. So you have to constantly adapt. So you might set yourself a goal that you want to achieve, but the path should be flexible. You should be able to adapt to work towards the goal. And I think that's the main change between modern product management and traditional project management.
Products could be around and evolve through a longer period. They have a longer, longer lifetime. If they're doing well, they have a longer and longer lifetime. And in your experience, Willem-Jan, what are the key challenges that first that leaders face in navigating these complex product environments?
I really like how you address that the product is also something that has a larger lifespan. And with that, we have teams that will be focusing on their product for a longer time, starting from exploration all the way to, at a certain point, disbanding the product. And that can take years and years, of course. Indeed, that's a totally different focus, focusing on value, on the outcome that you want to achieve with your product, instead of just that one-off thing that you want to achieve with your project.
Yeah.
My experience on key challenges leaders face. Well, leaders need to learn to let go and trust the teams to find the best solutions. If you look at traditional leaders, managers, they are often the ones with the answer or with the direction that you should go left and then follow that route, and then you will come to the Holy Grail. But nowadays, in a complex environment, leaders can come up with this is what we want to achieve. This is the outcome that we want to generate, the impact that we want to make. And then trusting the professionals that you have in your organization to find the best way forward. And another thing that leaders face is often, if you are working in a larger organization with a traditional culture, you have islands of agility, or islands where the learning culture is fostered, and other parts where the traditional approach is still high on the radar, where they still expect detailed plans and expert analysis to be key. And navigating that is very difficult for leaders as well.
Do you have empathy for leaders who are faced with that type of situation? Because that's not easy. Say you joined an organization as a leader and you see these two pockets of different ways of working happening at the same time. And I'm not saying that one is invalid. There has to be an appreciation of what is needed, or what type of situation.
I can even go further. This is one of the main topics that we as our coaches want to address. We also don't want to dive into the discussion of who is right and who is wrong, because indeed, they both can be right in their own way, or they can all both be partly right, but we are seeking for the common ground. And the common ground is typically that you want to achieve the company goals. If you agree upon that, you have something that you can work with. Both parts of the organization are agreeing, this is what we want to do, and this is what we want to achieve. And then the next question can be, what you are doing right now, is that helping you to take that step to the value? And what you often see in the traditional procedures and parts of the organization, that they don't know. Because this is not something that they are used to do, because generating the output is success, instead of looking at, okay, actually, did we achieve what we wanted to achieve? Did we get more users? Are users more happy with our product? Did we increase our revenue? Asking that question and letting them think about that, and maybe also helping them to find ways to really make that connection, that's often a good next step. And that also brings these people that have a more traditional way of looking at things, often also people at finance and risk management, with the people that are building the product. Because in the end, they are all crucial to build that experience. It's not only about the software that you create. It is also about the support that you provide to your customer, or that sales has a good story, a story that matches with what the product can do, and that operations can bring a stable system. It all ties together.
This is so good, because you're painting a lovely, lovely, productive picture of the way that you coach actually, your teams. And I can tell that you're coaching your teams in such a good way because of the way you talk about it, Willem-Jan. Because what you're saying is you want to be able to involve different functions who are used to working in a more of a traditional setting, using more traditional project management, but you're moving them more towards a product way of thinking, but not through force, but through asking them the questions on how are you going to find your way to this goal? And is it the same path that you're already using? And that is really powerful because that means that you're creating the space for the answers to come from different business units that may not have worked in an agile way before.
Thank you. Well, one thing, a tip that I often give the project managers that's creating the plans to also include the desired outcome. To not only say we are going to deliver this and this and this, but also to say, and this is what we want to achieve. Because if they take that seriously, if they also commit to that, then they also have to find ways to understand if they are heading in the right direction.
If you ask me in my project management days to put the outcome in my project plans, I'd immediately look at those project plans and have a real hard thinking moment because I'd be like, hold on, Willem-Jan's asking me to put my outcome on this project plan. If I look at my steps, I can't necessarily guarantee it. The logical thought pattern then is, whoa, how am I going to have to experiment to get here?
This was for me also the epiphany when I learned more about an agile way of working, that I always lacked to include the desired outcome. I think I can relate to the project managers that are still working in this way, and maybe rightly so. Their environment can be that stable that you can do it like that. But how often isn't it the case that they don't know that they are working in an environment that is ever changing and success is not guaranteed?
Talking about that and in those environments, because I can tell, Willem-Jan, you've got a ton of leadership coaching experience. Describe like an instance where a leadership decision significantly impacted like a product's performance and how a product actually performed in the market.
So we are a financial institution, so we have to adhere to regulators like the central banks. Yeah. So they have all kinds of rulings that we have to adhere to. For instance, showing that our payments, that we don't have many fraudulent payments within our system. Gut reaction was to create really a design for a system to do that, a fancy system to be able to show our fraudulent payments and have all kinds of matrices and all kinds of fantastic charts. But then the product manager actually said, well, actually, my question to you is to provide that information to the central bank. You find the best way to do it. And I give you a challenge that you can provide the information, new information every 2 weeks. So then all of a sudden, the team didn't focus on creating that fancy product anymore, but instead they simply generated the list in Excel, because extracting the information from the database, putting it in Excel, it was not fancy, but it was exactly what the central bank needed at that point. We did more things like that, rudimentary functionality maybe, but did what it needed to do, namely providing the information. At a certain point, the Dutch National Bank even commended us for being a front runner on providing this information so fast. So instead of focusing on gold plating your solution, we simply said, well, based upon the goal that the leader set, let's just focus on the minimum viable product that we can deliver.
You are maximizing the amount of work not done.
Exactly. Yeah, one of the principles of agility. Yeah.
And in that instance, so you described the product owner challenging the team and then the team working with speed to say, really, what's the bare minimum that we can do to meet these requirements, right? To make sure that we have got full handle on any sort of fraudulent transactions coming through our systems. But then what did your senior leadership, what was their take on that approach? Knowing that you weren't building like a gold-gilded system to be able to surface this information quickly, but actually, you were working at speed to provide what is needed.
Well, they were hands off from the start. They simply trusted the product owner. Indeed, it was a product owner. I said product manager, but it was a product owner. I should give him the credit that he would be able to find the best way to the goal together with the team. So they simply said, well, this is what we need to do. We need to adhere to these regulations. And we have to do it quickly. We need to be in good standing with the national banks as soon as possible, because we were not doing fine. Many payment institutions, by the way, are in that situation that they are not doing the best in that regard. Mm. And that goal was simple to be translated for the product owner, and the team also simply got it. And they also felt the trust provided by these leaders that they could find their best way to that solution. There was no issue there at all. They were even very happy that we did it so quickly. And I say I was a scrum master of that team. So I feel, of course, a part of that success.
Quite rightly so. Trust is a massive deal, especially when we're in environments where there is quick turnaround. We want to be able to find the most efficient ways of doing things, even if we don't have the answers, if we have to experiment to get the answers.
Yep.
Trust being demonstrated by leadership is a massive deal because it spurs teams on. You can tell the difference in environment, right? Between a team that doesn't feel that trust from leadership, doesn't feel that camaraderie, doesn't feel that sense of approachability. I can approach my leaders if I've got problems or if I want to talk things through. These leaders are accessible to me. I can approach them. There's a difference, right, in that feeling that teams have. When you coach leaders, what advice do you give them, William Yan, when there is a lack of trust in their environment to like spur them on, to sort of like get them to, as you said at the top of this recording, you said, my biggest piece of advice is to challenge leaders to let go and give that trust. How do you coach them? How do you inspire them?
It all starts with raising the understanding that they can't predict the future and that they don't have the answers. They are professionals. They have so many great people working in the company for the products that company sells. There's so many great people in the company who are very professional and they know a lot about how to build a product, how to create value. You can say, well, we want to head in that direction, but show them that you trust them to solve the puzzle instead of coming with the pieces and then saying, well, you should do that like this. So first of all, Simply don't interfere. That's one. But also simply say that you don't know either and that you trust the team to do it.
Driving performance in a product-centric environment, how does it differ from traditional metrics that we used to use in our former project management days?
If you look at the traditional way of looking at performance, it was also all about how many activities were you able to finish or how much work were you able to get done? How much code were you able to deploy? Yeah. Things like that. And that's all great and fine. But if it doesn't bring you the benefits, these are not good measures. And you can even rig the game. You have the term velocity, for instance, that the team says, well, we can do 35 story points every sprint. A manager could say, okay, 2 months from now, you have to do 50. Well, then they are simply going to overestimate their items and they will do 50. Instead of that, as an example, objectives and key results. You can set an objective saying, well, we want to grow our revenue with 20% by the end of the year, making great products. And then you can actually take steps and then measure if you are progressing towards your goals. And that's also a way to measure performance of the teams. Are they actually creating the value that you want them to create and that they are set out to create? So it's all about value creation, achieving the outcome that you want to achieve and making the impact for the company. And not about how many activities can I do and how much output can I create.
Absolutely. And sometimes there's a wrong emphasis on that. And it can get conflated as well, can't it? Like the old metric of meeting a specific milestone. But sometimes that milestone in a project management sense can be set, but it can also be an artificial milestone.
Yep.
Whereas if you've got some key leading or lagging indicators, for example, if you're using the OKRs method, then exactly as you said, you can define very early on whether your experiments or your work is showing up and giving you results. If you get releases out there or products out there or features out there, are they driving you closer? Or if not, time to pivot.
The thing that you said about milestones, I fully agree with that. Although there's also the pitfall that people think that milestones are not agile.
No, I would
disagree with that. There's only the topic of you have milestones for the outcome that you want to achieve, the goals that you want to meet, and not when are you going to bring it to production. It's when are you actually bringing the value to the customer that the customer says, this is the product that I like, or that you see a growth in revenue or in payment flow or those kind of indicators that really matter.
Yes.
Of course, you can have milestones for that, just like you have milestones for adhering to the regulators. But that's the milestone that you want to meet, that you are 100% adhering to the regulators, not that you have created a shiny functionality that can produce that information. That's only one step towards what you really want to achieve.
That's my point. Like the one that says, well, how did you guys produce it? You produced it with spreadsheet outputs, right? So that is a milestone, produce spreadsheet outputs. Yeah, it's great. You can measure it and look forward to it as a team because that's a team achievement. But the milestone that's actually going to give you results is getting it in the hands of your regulators or...
And regulators saying, well, this is ticking the box.
Exactly. In terms of continuous learning and adaptability, what role do those things play for leaders in fast evolving spaces that we work in, Willem-Jan?
Yeah, in my view, these are vital. These are key elements. The only way to really stay on track towards your goals is to regularly assess if you are heading in the right direction in the first place. So you have to do continuous learning. It's basically you're doing every time you do experiments. If you don't know exactly if a certain initiative brings you closer, you're doing an experiment.
Yes.
And you want to have that verified as soon as possible to know, should I continue this way or should I find another way? So it's constantly about learning and then adapting.
So would you say that it would be a lot more helpful in product spaces if leaders asked about the experiments that can be conducted rather than have that expectation of a definite solution?
Yes, also that. And I think added to that, there's also a role for the stakeholders. So internal stakeholders, let's say risk, finance, operations, but also customers and users that they can also, that they are also on board of this learning path. That they understand this is a complex environment. We are taking baby steps to understand if we are heading in the right direction. And you are all on board in the collaboration. For instance, with Scrum, you have the sprint review where you sit together with your stakeholders to discuss what you created, what you have learned, and information that the stakeholders can bring to understand what are we going to do next.
And they're very much part of that in Scrum. What I like about again, at the beginning of the call, you talked about actually involving other business functions within the space that you're working in Worldline to take them with you on that journey. So they understand the way of working, the expectations on them. But you know what? They also understand the gift that is that sprint review because it's there for other stakeholders across the business to influence the direction that you're going in as well.
It's one of the most rewarding things that I have witnessed is that I had a coaching session with a risk management team at C level, at the highest level of the organization. I did a workshop about what does it mean to work in a complex environment, outcomes, the whole shebang. And then, how can you play a role in this whole thing? And then the epiphany that there's something like a sprint review or a moment of reflection where they can play a part and seeing how happy they were about that revelation, that they are not in an ivory tower, but that they can step down and can collaborate. That was really great to see.
I really like that. It sounds like a great coaching session that you had there.
Those are really rewarding moments. And that's why we as a team really shifted our focus towards leadership. Those are often the people that don't know how they can make themselves most valuable for the company. Because some of them are often stuck in the old way of seeing things and working with the culture of the company. What often comes into our workshops is the topic of what is our shared... what is our common ground? What do we all want to achieve? Yeah, we want to make an impact for the company, things like that. Yeah. And then we are peeling it down. And are we actually able to predict this? And then we are discussing things like the Stacey model.
Oh, I love that.
And Kinefin with the clear environment, the complicated, complex and chaotic environments. And then they see that they often recognize that much of what they do is gearing towards thinking that they are in a complicated environment where you through thorough analysis can find the best answer and then plan your way towards success. And then they often come to the conclusion, hey, wait a minute, much of what we do in the company is actually complex. Mm-hmm. And when they have that realization that there are two ways of working that are both great in their context and Agile is also not suited for the predictable environment, it's suited for a more environment where you don't know exactly what you need to do. When they have that realization, then you can take the next steps. Then we are often drilling down to specifics for the leaders, for the risk managers, or for people in other positions.
Do you know what this reminds me of? This part of our conversation is first few sections of Martin Dalmain's book, Driving Value with Sprint Goals.
Yeah.
Because what I loved about his book and what others haven't managed to do is that right from the first few sections, he focused on the environment that you're in.
Yeah.
And how often is it, William Yan, you go into environments, project or product, and you just get on with things without thinking, hold on a minute,
yeah.
let me take a step back here. Let me figure out how decisions are made. What's the complex stuff that we're working on? Is it complex? Are we just satisfied with the answers that experts give us in this space? Can we create a plan, a sensible and credible plan? Or do we have to experiment? Do we really not have all the answers? And his book got us to start thinking that way. And I've used like some of the examples that he's given in some of the coaching that I've done. And it's worked. It's worked to actually land that message home, which is a real
point. Really fantastic to hear. Martha Dalmain, is a friend of mine. I also helped review the book. I was not one of the key reviews, but I helped review the book. And I'm really honored that one of the chapters is even talking about my experience at my current company and the epiphany that I had.
Definitely. I saw that in there. I can relate. So we've got our final question, and this is around innovation and risk. How do you balance the need for innovation and risk involved in complex product environments? And how have you found that in some of the risk-based discussions that you've had in your environment?
Yeah, this is, I think, the topic that if you're talking with people from risk, they are getting happy. They are happy with my answer because I say, well, the things that are most risky, you want to get them out of the way as soon as possible.
Yeah,
you want to have an answer on these questions as soon as possible. So, for instance, is investing in a new idea, is that a good thing? Should you really invest 2 years in a new idea where you don't know exactly if this will bring merit? Try to find out as soon as possible, because it's also something that you see with Lean Startup.
Mm-hmm.
Do many small experiments, and from the 100 things, ideas that you have, maybe only 5 will bring the merits that you expected up front. And the 95 you can simply throw away. So that's a risk, financial risk, that you can take away as soon as possible by simply focusing on that and trying to get that answer as soon as possible.
Experiments are the way.
Another risk that we had with a solution of ours, a reporting solution, was we wanted to use new technology, but we didn't know if the technology was suitable for the amount of payments that we have throughout the system, because it's really humongous, the number of payments.
Right.
So the first thing that we did in the first sprint was to simply do such a test. Is this a new solution rigid enough to really be able to be a solution for our reporting tool? Luckily, the answer was yes, so we could continue with our solution. But if it wasn't, then we simply had the answer very, very soon, and we had to direct to another solution. So that's my answer to people who say that agile approaches are not looking at risk management or things like that. It's the opposite. It's the first thing that you tackle.
Yeah.
Get the things that are most important out of the way.
Risk is actually part of the DNA of working with in an agile way. It's part of the DNA of the values and the principles, I believe.
Yeah.
It's baked in there. You just need to be able to recognize it.
Yeah.
And obviously have the right messages given to you by the agile professionals in your environment.
Like most valuable items first. So in my book, it is very valuable to not sink 2 million euros into a project that is not worthwhile. If you know that after spending 10,000 euro, I think that's a big win.
And not be afraid of throwing things away that didn't work out.
Exactly. That's easier, I argue, if you work in an agile way, because that's the whole premise, that you are not going to say, well, everything that we did, but you're taking small steps to verify constantly if you're heading in the right direction. So all the steps that you took, they are confirmed, or they prove that they were not worthwhile. So that's the whole thing.
Do you know what the kicker is, William Yan? We do it in day-to-day life. As my sister always reminds me, because we cook together, you taste your meal. Who serves meals up to their family or their guests without tasting them?
Indeed.
They constantly, yeah. right? You would be tasting them, trying them out. Is this texture right? Does it look right? Etc. And then you adapt as you go. We do it in life. So it's a skill that we can adapt to our professional environments.
Children brain is also about inspecting and adapting constantly.
Yes.
They're constantly finding out new things to do based upon what they see happening. It's natural for humans, but somehow we were really being pushed in another direction.
Or that Tayloristic thinking.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I had the same word in mind. I was almost going to say it.
Can you leave our audience with any takeaways?
Yeah, I think the main takeaway is that you can't trust output. You really have to look at what am I actually achieving? What is the outcome that I'm going to create from my output? And that requires a different way of working.
Thank you for guiding us today, Willem-Jan, and spending this time with us to share your amazing experiences and how you're continuing to guide your colleagues and leadership at Worldline.
Thank you for the opportunity. It was really a great time.
Thank you for listening. Please make sure that you subscribe to our episodes so that you do not miss out on great speakers and great topics like this. Bye for now.